This episode of the Oh No 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 podcast is sponsored by Dynamic Industrial Services, the rope access specialists. The roof of the south stand at Starch Park is some 19 metres above the pitch, the same height as 11 Aidan Connollys. But as we all know, there's only one Aidan Connolly, and so you'd be much better off with Dynamic Industrial Services. DIS specialise in working at height, offering a range of services including maintenance, inspection and repair. To find out more, visit dynamicindustrialservices.co.uk.
The Rovers returned to Hampden Park this weekend, and I think it's fair to say that it never quite reached the excitement levels of our last visit. Jack Hamilton's thumping header and Ross Millen's chipped penalty might well have been the combined moments that truly confirmed that the Rovers were in a title race, but this low-key 0-0 wasn't quite the result that we wanted. It does look all but guaranteed that the championship title race will go down to the wire. So my name is Duncan Cameron, and to talk through this one today, I am joined by Leslie Mabon, first of all. How are you, Les?
Much better, having been out the house for 14 hours to see a 0-0 draw, having just gone on Twitter and reading about that Rangers fan from Wales and his son who were on an overnight bus to find the game at Dundee had been called off.
It's not funny, is it?
A little bit funny. Really not.
No. It wouldn't be funny if it was you. But then that's what you get for being a Rangers supporter, exactly. In my opinion. We've also got Scott Fleming. How are you, Scott?
Yeah, not too bad. And as you say, we're kind of getting right down to the nitty-gritty sort of stuff now with seven games to go.
So pressure's ramping up. It's all about who can cope with it better. And I know who I'm backing. And we've also got Blair Hopcroft too. How are you, Blair?
Very well, mate. Very well. Looking forward to this.
Excellent. So the kind of big news ahead of this one came courtesy of our good friends. James McPake, good guy. Matty Todd, good guy. Alex Jakubiak, never said a bad word about him. Kane Ritchie-Hosler does stuff. There we go. So the Pars beat Dundee United 3-1 on Friday night, as welcome as it was unexpected. Presented a big opportunity for the Rovers yesterday. Blair, before we actually get into the ins and outs of the game and the fact that nobody won a T-shirt trying to pick the world's most difficult lineup, in your opinion, does coming away with just a draw go down as a missed opportunity this weekend?
To an extent, I think it does. I think it has to. Especially the nature of the draw. And in a weird way, and I know we'll kind of go through the details of the game, but I'm not as annoyed as I would have been, because I feel like we created chances, we had really good opportunities, and we just couldn't get the ball over the line. You go back to the Morton game, the last 0-0 that we had, where it was not like that at all. Do you know what I mean? Nothing happened for 90 minutes. That wasn't the case yesterday. So I don't think it was a case of us, you know, bottling it, as every Dundee United fan in their Twitter account would have you believe. I don't think it was that at all. I think it was just the nature of the game, a decent side, and all in all, probably a decent point. Whether it turns out that way at the end of the season, we'll wait and see. But missed opportunity, but not too dejected by it.
Scott, you've said before, a point away, a point on the road in the Championship's never a bad result. Sticking by that after yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd pretty much said, or I think it might have been yourself that had said in our group chat that, like, a point is a good result in the Championship, but also it depends on how everything else has panned out in terms of Dundee United played the night before. So it maybe to some people didn't look as good a result, but at the same time, a clean sheet and a point on the road is pretty decent in the Championship. I just think that some folk need to put into perspective that at times the Rovers are going to drop points this season, and we've showed that we have, sometimes in more bizarre fashions than others, but like, I think it's just the fact that people have been spoilt this season, and some people have clearly been coming this season that haven't been going for season after season, because we've got 2,500 nearly more than what we had for years there. So I think some people, yeah, they need to maybe realise that the lads are giving us one hell of an effort this season. So I think, I wasn't buzzing that we drew 0-0 yesterday, but at the same time, we're now level. So I think if you'd given me that last Saturday before the Dunfermline game that we would gain the 4 points under the United, I'd definitely have taken that.
That's it. If we pick up a point more than Dundee United every weekend between now and the end of the season, then we'll be pretty happy with that. I think a lot of it comes down to timing as much as anything. I put this on Twitter last night, but if we'd played on Friday night and drawn 0-0, and then Dunfermline had beaten Dundee United 3-1 at 3 o'clock on Saturday, we'd have been cock-a-hoop. Like, we'd just been absolutely delighted with that. Coming, we'd be sitting here now having this conversation, absolutely over the moon, that we took a point and then Dundee United, with all the pressure, then lost to Dunfermline. It's just the timing kind of changes the conversation, but what it doesn't change is the reality of what the table looks like on Monday morning. I just think there's decent teams in this division, and you've got no divine right to beat anybody. I think we've seen that all the time. And I know what you mean about like the 0-0 that we played against Morton. Like, I didn't think that was a bad 0-0, both on a couple of levels. So a boy I worked with years ago texted me this morning to say, did I see you at that Rovers game yesterday? And I was like, well, yeah, I'm at the Rovers games all the time. As far as I'm aware, you're a Celtic supporter. It's not unusual to see me at the Rovers game. But he's like, oh, worst £20 I've ever spent. I was like, well, if you think that's a bad 0-0, like, I have news for you. That I thought that was pretty decent over the piece. And also, just from a Rovers point of view, as a 0-0, I thought it was like, a lot of the time you'll watch a 0-0 or even just a side that hasn't scored, and you think, like, could have played all night and not scored. And that 0-0 against Morton felt like that for both sides. Actually didn't feel like that to me yesterday. It felt like a Rovers goal almost felt inevitable, but only, like, the question was, would they get it before the final whistle went, almost? Like, if we'd just kept playing until somebody scored, I think the Rovers probably would have got it in maybe only, 10 minutes after the 90. It did feel like that pressure was building. But Leslie, what about you in terms of, perspective and kind of overall thoughts after that draw yesterday?
Something I'd said as I was coming down the train in the morning before we saw the team lines, before the game and anything, was that win, lose or draw, it doesn't really change anything, which sounds a bit of a weird thing to say, but I think what I mean is, because of the way the fixtures kind of work from now on in, it doesn't really change the fact that we need to go and get something at Tannadice, and also that the pressure on Dundee United when we play them at Tannadice is going to be huge. So clearly a couple of extra points would have been really nice, but for me, as I say, it doesn't change the fact that we still need to go there and perform, and that there is going to be a lot of pressure at Dundee United, regardless of what they do when they play that game against Inverness before us. So for me, it's a good point, and we'll come on and we'll talk about the game. It was quite, telling, we didn't go bonkers at the end to try and get the win. We weren't sending the goalie up for corners, we weren't going three at the back. If you think earlier in the season, Ian Murray was saying things like, I'd rather have 3 points and zero and I'd rather lose and trying to win. We didn't do that yesterday. And I think that was quite telling. The kind of language that Murray was using in his interview, the way he tried to see the game out. Clearly, he would have wanted the win, but he wasn't going to risk us losing to get it. So I think it was a very measured and controlled and sensible point that, as I say, doesn't change the fact that we have a very big game coming up for both sides at the end of this month.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, actually, that probably the one thing that Like the big scenario you want to avoid is being sort of 4 or more points behind Dundee United going into that game at Tannadice. You don't want them having that kind of safety net of at least we'll still be top, whatever happens. Now it feels kind of like, obviously it's not, there's still games to come after that, but it feels like that's the biggest moment remaining in this title race almost, is that game at Tannadice. And well, we've said it enough times, and I'm glad that since the first time we've said it, Jim Goodwin has really doubled down on sort of proving this theory that he can't perform under pressure. And there will not be any greater pressure in this kind of championship title race than that game at Tannadice. And at the point when it kicks off, the away end is going to be absolutely bouncing. Like every single person that away end, it's going to be like it finished the last time we were there. It's going to be full optimism, full back in the team, full voice, all that stuff. And the home end is going to be nervous and sort of on the verge of uproar. You know, like, it's obviously, it's not going to happen. But if the Rovers scored from kickoff in that game, Tannadice would be in revolt. Like, they, because they've already basically written off Jim Goodwin. They are now just strapped in to see if he can get them promoted and then try and jettison him in the summer to get somebody better in. And, yeah, so that, I agree with what you're saying, that actually, because they'd lost almost whatever happened with Rovers, obviously a win would have been excellent and would have been more welcome than a draw. But I was the same. We got to the end of the game and I was a long, long way from being annoyed or fed up or anything with. I think there are alternative ways where that game goes and it finishes 0-0 and you're annoyed and you're disappointed. But I just didn't see that with the way that the kind of the game developed or the way the Rovers approached the game. You know, we said before it, like on prior form this weekend, going to Hampden was a trickier assignment than going to East End Park, if you look at what the two teams had to do. I don't think a draw is a bad result against sort of Callum Davidson's Queen's Park. They've been doing well. So, I'm glad we're all kind of on the same page with that, which, like, it is literally a missed opportunity, but it not in the way that, like, bottle merchants, all this kind of stuff that I think folk who haven't watched that game have been trying to pick that narrative out, just looking at the scoreline. I don't think it was reflected in the actual pattern of the game.
But let's have to remember as well, I was just going to say, just really quickly, we've got a free week next week, and they've got Inverness at home. So they were almost certainly going to go into the game at Tannadice against us, top of the league. Like, I fully expect them to win that game next week. There's actually, I wouldn't even say it's a pressure thing. And I'm actually really glad that the, because that's the one thing United have done relatively well this season, apart from the kind of, there was the one spell where they kind of had a wee sticky patch. But when they have had a setback, they've managed to kind of rectify it quite quickly. I'm glad they're going to rectify it against Big Dunk rather than, you know, their next game being against us. So I fully expect them to be top of the league when we go into that game, and I fully expect the pressure to be on them to stay there. Do you know what I mean? As we go into that Tannadice game, I think you're absolutely right. I think the home end's going to be really nervous.
That's it. They, you know, it's not, it's a convenient narrative for us that they struggle with pressure, but there is a big enough body of evidence now that
totally.
It's really, like, there is additional pressure for them to prove that they can cope under pressure.
Yeah.
Certainly fortunate for us that we've got, you know, a bit of a break, time to get some bodies back as well. The surprise in the lineup yesterday, the surprise that saves us, the price of one t-shirt. because, in fairness, I don't know if Robbie's actually sort of conducted a comprehensive check just to make sure nobody predicted that, nobody had any inside information, but certainly the entries that I saw, nobody predicted James Brown dropping out and Ross Matthews coming in at right back. But that was the big the big surprise in the team news. Taking that you know, one half of that, so taking the fact that James Brown was missing out, was there any alternative approach you maybe would have expected? Or I'm thinking in particular, like Scott McGill, for example, could have potentially come in at right back. Scott, start with you. Were you surprised it was Ross Matthews? Did you see any prospect of a back three or anything else in there?
I mean, with Ian Murray, there's always the potential of a back three. It's potential of a back two. It can happen. So, I mean, I wasn't too surprised that he went with Ross Matthews because, as we were saying yesterday before, the like once the team was out, that Matthews, when he was just as he broke through under McGlynn, McGlynn had played him out there as like cover a few times and he played fine. But I'd actually been told, I was speaking to a guy who helps out the Rovers with some physio stuff this season, and he was saying that in some of the bounce games, they've played Ross Matthews at right back. So they've obviously been thinking about maybe we might need him at some point. And Matthews has probably said to Murray, he says, look, I can play there if needed. So it's good that we've got that sort of versatility in the squad. And obviously, Scott Brown was still at centre-back again. Even though Keith Watson was back, but yet again, three clean sheets in a week. So he's doing his bit back there, and he has done for, I think, was it Leslie said last week, he's been over 40% of the games. He's basically started at centre-half this season. So he almost is a centre-half this year, which is mental. But I mean, overall, I think the rest of the team kind of was close to what folk thought in terms of midfield to front. It was just obviously that right back area that wasn't what everyone was thinking. I think the only thing I would say about the McGill situation is that he's not played really much football since when? October? November? So the fact he's not playing Dylan Corr, I would be surprised if he then goes, oh, well, I've not played Scott McGill for 3 months, let's just chuck him in. So I think it was the case that Ross Matthews has been playing, let's just keep going. I mean, to be fair, Ross Matthews looked like a right-back yesterday. He was pushing forward. He was, like, sending good long balls towards Ruddon. And also just, he just looked comfortable, which I was a little bit surprised considering, he's not long back for injury, but how many years ago would it been that he would have been in a competitive game at right-back? So, now fair play to him.
I think it naturally just suits him, though, doesn't it? Like, McGill's a more... I think when McGill first signed for us and they talked about, you know, Davy Hancock always does that, what do you bring? What, tell us about Scott McGill kind of thing. He talked about being a 10, like that was his preferred kind of position, as more attacking. Whereas Ross Matthews is very much a box-to-box midfielder. And all you're really doing is shifting him 15, 20 yards to the right-hand side and asking him to do the same job. He's more defensively minded. He's more kind of aggressive, I think is important as well. But I'd echo what Scott said, but he was brilliant yesterday. He was absolutely brilliant. I absolutely loved that performance from Ross Matthews because it was everything that you want from Ross Matthews. Like I say, hard work, endeavour, dig. I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah, I thought so too. Cause, I mean, we were in the car. So I was driving, my dad had the line up and he's like, there's no James Brown, like, oh, Christ, okay. And he's looking at like the BBC lineup, and he's like, they've got Turner at right back, and we're both like, well, the one thing we can guarantee is it's not going to be Kyle Turner at right back. So then you're just looking at the rest of the team, like, who will this be? And it's that, as you say, Scott, there's the ever present spectre of, is Ian Murray just going to do something ludicrous? You're like, if it's a back four, who's going to play right back? And it's exactly that. Ross Matthews, think, okay, going to have to play someone out of position, put them in at a fullback. What do you want? Well, you want, you know, like the ability to pass, the ability to tackle, a bit of drive, more than anything else, like disciplined, I think is what you get from Ross Matthews. Like he absolutely sticks to his role almost regardless of what it is. I was quite happy with that. You know, it's a thing you see sometimes. You see managers, I think Doug Emery actually did this yesterday with Tyler French, who they'd been playing at right back and had been, you know, kind of stinking out the joint. So he decided to move him into defensive midfield. You do see that sometimes, like kind of moving the fullback into the middle. It's probably rarer to see you moving a defensive midfielder out to fullback. But I was so much happier with Ross Matthews doing that rather than what I think a lot of managers would do, which is, you know, moving a centre half out wide. Like I've mentioned that a number of times, McGlynn kept doing it with Dave Mackay.
Yeah.
It's like what you get in defensive solidity, you lose so much more when you've actually got the ball. And that's what I was really impressed with Ross Matthews.
I wonder, just to jump in quickly, I wonder if Josh Mullen would have been a debate if he was fit. My problem would have been that the last time he did that was when we were at home at Queen's Park and missing a right back. So
yeah.
I'm kind of glad he went with Matthews, but I think that was the decision was obviously taken out of his hand that Mullen wasn't fit enough. So it might have been a different question if he had been fit. I'm still saying that if this comes up again in the last seven games of the season, you're going with Ross Matthews ahead of Josh Mullen because Josh Mullen gives you so much more going forward. And he showed in a couple of games this season, he really struggles to watch when like players are rotating around him who he's meant to be picking up. So I think you've got to go with a sort of more defensive option in Matthews.
Matthews, it just gives you a better balance. In there, and I'd say it was you know what you're getting with Ross Matthews is if you ask him to defend, he will defend and he'll do it well. And the bit that impressed me was the few times that he actually sort of stepped out as well. And I think kind of naturally because of, you know, where he's used to playing, he kind of drifted inside a couple of times rather than kind of overlapping round Aidan Connolly. He was coming inside, but that's a perfectly good option. And you could see the defence, the Queen's Park defence, struggling with it a little bit. But yeah, Leslie, you, as Scott says, you've been kind of keeping an eye on the various permutations in this defence. So two midfielders into the defence yesterday, but it's another clean sheet. Just give me your thoughts on the that whole situation, please.
So I've been looking at the numbers, and again, this is not a precise science, and I might have missed things because I was just looking at it during a coffee break. I make it now, I think that's 14 games this season of the 29 or whatever we've played, that Scott Brown has started as a centre-back. So we're almost half the games. We've started with a midfielder who 2 years ago was playing part-time football in the leagues below as a centre-back. It's always worth keeping that in mind. I do not mean any disrespect to Scott Brown when I say that. You know, we're up against Dundee United, who've got a full international at the heart of their defence. You know, so it's worth just keeping that in perspective. And I think fans of other teams scoffing, oh, use a bottle that use a shot at the bed, would do very well to bear that in mind, that, you know, we had two midfielders starting in the defence yesterday. And I think, you know, just to carry on my venting, I think something else that's worth bearing in mind is we had, that was three starting members that were missing yesterday. So no Watson, no James Brown, also no Josh Mullen. You're taking three starting players out. What that means then is you're taking Ross Matthews and Scott Brown out of the midfield, which is limiting what you can do further forward. You know, you're then asking Aidan Connolly to put a shift in, who, bear in mind, has not had a pre-season and is, you know, was missing at the start of the season. So, you know, you're missing three starting members, but because of the nature of who you're missing, it's really limiting what you can do to further up the pitch. So, and that's one of the big reasons why I really would hesitate to say yesterday was a missed opportunity, given the kind of constraints that we had. I mean, the thing I did find, what really kind of fried my brain. So I got the team line, so I stepped off the train at Mount Florida, and you're looking, you're thinking, okay, there's no James Brown. The logical thing there is Ross Matthews goes into the right back. But then you're looking at the bench, you're seeing Sean Byrne on the bench. And so you're thinking, right, well, who's playing sort of at the base of the midfield? And you're kind of thinking, what's going to happen in there? You know, so presumably one of Turner, and it turned out it was going to be Turner playing a bit deeper, Turner, Stanton, possibly Vaughan. You're trying to figure out what happened. So that was a bit that surprised me, was if Matthews comes out the base of the midfield and Brown's at centre-back, who's doing the sort of deeper role in the midfield? And that's what I couldn't figure that out until we actually kicked off.
I don't know if Sean Burns maybe still just got a little bit of an issue.
I did wonder that.
I think he must do.
Yeah.
Because that, certainly it would seem like, for exactly what you've said there, it would be a more natural fit. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was like a critical issue or something that was, you know, crying out to be resolved or anything. I did think the first half, Kyle Turner was kind of facing his own goal a little bit too often. He was kind of chasing back and having to do a lot of stuff that I suspect Kyle Turner's not, it's not the top of his list for what he wants to be doing. You would suspect if Sean Byrne was kind of fully fit and firing, he might have come in there. I mean, to be fair, Kyle Turner played well on Tuesday night. He got his assist as well. And I don't think he played badly yesterday.
Yeah,
but yeah, maybe he just would have given a bit of slightly better balance.
We had the same debate on the bus. I was going to say the back four versus the back three thing, and it was the rest of the lineup that kind of made me feel quite confident he was going with that back four. If he'd gone back three, I would have expected to see Smith in there because he's done that kind of role for him before. Obviously, in the absence of Mullen, who's another kind of stalwart that he's used in that kind of midfield role. But if you're playing a back three, you're definitely not playing Aidan Connolly and Dylan Easton as your two wide men. Maybe Connolly. I didn't see you relying on Easton to cover the left-hand side of your pitch. As good as he can be, I don't think that's his role. I thought Turner was actually really good yesterday. I agree, Duncan, it was a very different kind of role for him. It was far more deep, but there was, and I say shades of, but there was shades of Regan Henry in there yesterday for me, just the way that he controlled the game and the way that he kind of pulled the strings a little bit. His distribution is brilliant. His set-piece deliveries are phenomenal. Like, the fact that we've got him in, you know, Mullen's injured and is missing, who's arguably your best set-piece taker, and then you've got Turner, who's just come in and picked up the mantle. Do you know what I mean? It's really positive.
Yeah, no, I was thinking that too. I mean, it's just every week we're seeing more and more of the Kyle Turner we thought we were getting. You know, and I mean, you're watching him, especially in the second half, you could just see his tail was up, you know. He'll get the ball in the middle. And I think the Regan Henry comparison's a really good one, because you're expecting, if that's Sean Byrne, he's going to make a sideways pass and it's going to find another player and it's all going to be fine.
Yeah.
Turner, you think he's going to pass, then he'll take it round the boy and he'll go on a wee run with it and he'll drive it forward. And it was, you can just see the confidence starting to come back, and we're starting, it's just the right time for him to be coming into a rich vein of form.
It bodes well. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you mentioned this set piece ability there. Set pieces were kind of the story of the first half, or certainly the opening kind of exchanges. It was a half of two halves. I thought that first 45 yesterday, the kind of first 25 minutes maybe, the Rovers were on top. There were a lot of corners in that time. And then, maybe the second, sort of the 20 minutes up till half time, Queens might be a little bit more on top. But no, I don't think either goalkeeper really had kind of too much to do. Any particular thoughts on the first half? What about, actually, Blair, give me your thoughts on Zach Rudden and kind of the role that he played in that first half.
Yeah, I feel bad. I've been quite vocal about how much I've enjoyed him since he's come. I did not enjoy Zach Rudden yesterday. His first half performance for me was pretty much the problem that we had in that first half. Nothing stuck. Nothing that went forward stayed there long enough for anybody in the midfield. Because Turner was playing that kind of deeper role, the ball was almost bypassing Stanton. But because because Rudden wasn't able to kind of hold the ball up or kind of feed anybody in, it was then bypassing Stanton on the way back. So for the first 25 minutes or so, we looked good. But then in that sort of second 20 minutes, I don't think Stanton touched the ball pretty much in that 20 minutes, because it just seemed to pass him by in both directions. I made the joke at halftime, but Rudden reminded me when you see like a newborn baby giraffe that doesn't quite know how his legs work. It was just, it was all limbs. It was everywhere. The ball wasn't sticking to him. He couldn't get it under control. He couldn't get any kind of foothold on the game, which was disappointing. I mean, he's obviously, Murray had said he'd been ill through the week, so it's maybe just part of that. I don't know, I'm making excuses for the guy, but it wasn't a good first half performance. And I have to say, alongside him, I don't think Dylan Easton had a particularly great day yesterday either. Looked good, I thought, in spells, Easton, but was really guilty of losing the ball. He did it. There was one point I thought was really interesting, actually. He lost the ball about three times in the space of about 2 or 3 minutes. And Easton's obviously a really popular player in that dressing room. And it was Turner that went for him. Turner's standing about 5 yards from him, like pointing at him and going, three times you've done that, cut it out. Which I love. I love that accountability thing that we've got going on. But yeah, Ruddon for me yesterday, nah, didn't happen.
The thing with Easton yesterday is he seemed to be, and this must be incredibly frustrating as the player himself, as much as anything. Like, his movement was really good, and he was getting into the right areas, and there were a couple of times he actually sort of beat his man, and it was just that, like, the final ball where he just can't quite wrap his foot around it. And there's one that's, it's on the highlights, where he's kind of on the touchline, and he's quick feet, and he kind of steps around two players, and does it really well. And then as he goes to just play, like, the 5 yard pass, he kind of trips the ball just a couple of yards away from himself. And it's that kind of thing where, it's going so well, but if the final ball's not there, it doesn't really count for anything. No. I think the big thing with Dylan Easton is that he keeps going.
Yeah.
A lot of wingers at this level, you see they start off like that and you can tell what kind of game they're going to have based on their first 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Whereas Easton does at least have that ability to keep going. And that might mean that he loses the ball three times in the bounce.
Yeah.
But at least he's,
I would say the same for Ruddon,
three things.
I would say exactly the same for Ruddon. It's funny, we had this same conversation, obviously second half, when he substituted the two of them at the same time and took them both off. I was talking about it, the one attribute I would put to them, the player that epitomised it most for me, was Grant Anderson. So Grant Anderson was a player for the Rovers who a lot of people thought was mince. And he was good and he did his job, but he was quite limited. But he used to get quite a lot of stick week in, week out. And it was because he never hid. He was always involved and he was always a part of it. So he would always make a mistake and he would always lose the ball. It was just part and parcel of having Grant Anderson in your team. And it's that thing. Ruddon was the same yesterday. He never stopped. It wasn't going well. Easton never stopped. It wasn't going well. But I like that about this team. There is no, and again, a player I quite enjoy, but there's no Joe Cardell. You know what I mean? There's nobody hiding away on the touchline thinking, nah, no for me today.
I think the thing with Ruddon is if I sort of picture his average kind of interaction yesterday, his average piece of play, it's probably with his back to goal, maybe 50 yards off the byline, slightly to the side of the centre circle, just kind of trying to bring the ball in and trying to release it to somebody. Actually, a couple of things that didn't happen, exactly. But even when he does, it's a case of bring it down, turn, move. He's still 45 yards away from goal. And there is one chance where he does that and he does manage to get turned and he gets going. And you can see actually very briefly he looks up and he thinks, I've not had a shot all game. I could have one here. And he's still 40 yards away. And he's
see it.
And he slips a good pass in. But you can definitely see that's the first thing in his mind. But I like that in a striker. But it's very... it's not the game any striker wants to have, and it's a game I think you see a lot of strikers have at this level, and in particular the last couple of seasons we've talked about it a lot. You're playing guys like Ethan Varian up front or Jamie Gullen as well sometimes, where you think you're effectively playing a focal point striker. Vaughan's there as well, but you're playing like a big guy up front, and has he had any shots? Like, and that's not the be-all and end-all, but when Zach Ruddon's been at his best, he's been doing all that movement and he's been kind of getting chances as well, and that just never really kind of came off for him. Scott, anything you want to add on the first half in general?
Not too much. I mean, I think we looked comfortable for most of the half. I mean, Queen's Park, from what I could see from the stream that I had and then also in the highlights, was like they had a few sort of half chances and shots, but like Kev didn't really look too troubled in anything. And then, I mean, I think somebody put in the group chat yesterday we'd had about 7 corners in like 25 minutes. And it was just like, surely we're going to get a chance at one of them here. just by the low averages, but... again, we didn't really create too much in terms of, other than just a few half chances. So, no, I thought it just kind of, the whole game, to be honest, was a bit like that. It was just other than obviously we'll talk about the chance that Callum Ferry made a really good save in the second half, but the whole game was just full of half chances, really. It wasn't like, oh, that's an absolute sitter, or he has to score that. There wasn't a lot of that yesterday, but at the same time, it was by far better than 0-0 at Holt and Green at Morton. So, no, the first half, I just thought we looked comfortable, to be honest.
Yeah, we never looked in danger in that first half, but probably never kind of created enough either. Second half was a little bit more open. The highlights for the second half kind of start with two kind of refereeing incidents, I suppose you would call them. Leslie, the first one, Rudden's fouled on the edge, or sort of in and around the edge of the box. Sorry, no, that's not true. Rudden fouls him officially, yeah, if you go by the record of the game. Now, I thought at the time, I thought he'd given the free kick for diving, actually. I thought he'd kind of penalised Rudden for going down too easily. But it does look like actually he gives the foul. Give me your thoughts on that kind of incident, please.
It was, I was like you, I was really confused. I couldn't quite work out what was going on from the stand, because it looks like, you know, Rudden fouls the boy fouls him. I actually thought for a split second, I thought we'd got a penalty. And I was kind of like out my seat, like, hey, penalty. Turned out it wasn't quite the case. You know, as you say, I thought it was a foul given for diving. It turned out that wasn't the case. And, you know, and then we also had what, again, from the stand, looked like another penalty shout a bit later. But again, it was one of those ones where, and it's a cliche, but it's true, the players were not protesting as much as the fans. And I think that's often the giveaway in these situations, when you don't get as much protestation from the guys on the pitch as you do from the folk in the stands. So yeah, it could have gone either way, but I wasn't as aggrieved as I might have been in another day.
Blake, give me your thoughts on that Rudden one. I don't know if you've seen the highlights back to a second look at it.
Yeah, I thought it was a penalty. I'm not going to lie. I think they're jostling each other, they're wrestling each other, but the contact that that Rudden makes on the defender does not make the defender fall in the direction that he falls. So if it genuinely is a foul, he'd have fallen the other way for me. I don't think he has enough contact on him. And then the boy kind of wipes him out. I do think Rudden goes down like he's diving, which probably doesn't help. You know, you sometimes see that, like a player who is actually fouled but somehow makes it look like he hasn't been. I think the way he went down was quite theatrical, so it probably went against him a little bit. I thought giving the foul the other way was ludicrous for me, to be fair. I thought I said at the time, if it's not a penalty, play on, because there's no way Rudden's fouled him.
No, I see. I honestly just did not occur to me that it was a foul. As I thought he'd booked him for, or I say he didn't book him, which was led to my further confusion. Not a unique situation. And I, looking at it back, I think it looks like a penalty to me as well. There's not a huge amount of contact, but it's Rudden's kind of, both his feet are off the ground, so it doesn't take a huge amount of contact. And as you see, he does kind of collapse to the floor, but I think he's just a big laddie. That's what happens.
I think it was the baby giraffe thing, wasn't it? Limbs everywhere.
And then the one after that, Aidan Connolly has a shot kind of into kind of two bodies, and I'm going to say Ian Grieve has put the highlights together, I assume. Apologies if it was someone else on the editing duties. Gives us a good two or three replays of that. I don't know what I'm supposed to be looking at with that. Scott, are you seeing a handball in there? I mean, Aidan Connolly did. Aidan Connolly's going tonto, but how about you?
Well, to be fair, I was screaming for Connolly to just hit it first time before taking that touch, before he set himself for it. But I think what we're supposed to be looking at is once the defender's blocked it, it's then hit off the other defender in front of him. And it's hit him like up near his shoulder.
In the arm.
But like, the guy has no time to react, and it's literally stuck to his side. So like, it's different if his arm's like miles out for his body, then right, you've got an argument. But and the fact that he went like mental, I was like, right, calm down a wee bit. It's not an absolute sitter here that he's missed, but it's not. I didn't think it was a penalty, and if a penalty was given against us or something like that, I'd be going off my head. that's a penalty. So, no, even I think even if, well, we might get to the next season, but if VAR was involved in that, I'm pretty certain that would have just been waved off straight away. Because, like, what you're meant to do, a ball just deflects your way a yard from the defender that's next to you, and your arm's right next to your body. There's nothing else you can do. So, nah, it wasn't a penalty for me.
Yeah, that was kind of how I saw it as well. His arms are down by his side. It does come up. It hits him in the sleeve. It's not a... I think it would be a very, very soft penalty, that one. kind of after that point, the chances really start kind of coming in. And there's enough chances to win a game of football in this. And this, I think, is why I wasn't kind of disgruntled or anything by the end of the game. As I said earlier, it felt like a goal was coming. It just maybe was going to take, you know, 40 or 50 minutes, and there was only 15 minutes left. The first chance is one of these ones where if you were to describe it to someone, it just feels inevitably like it must be a goal. So Lewis Vaughan nutmegs the goalkeeper inside the six-yard box, and somehow the ball ends up going away from the goal, which, I mean, and it's not a, like, there's no criticism of Vaughan there. It's not like he's wasted the chance or anything. I mean, he actually does really well to create the chance. He's in a really kind of tight space and brings it round, does everything right. I think in what will be a recurring theme over the next couple of minutes, I think you've just got to credit the goalkeeper. He makes himself big, he gets something on it, and it's enough to bring it away from the goal. And then I think the next thing after that is really Kevin Dabrowski's one big involvement, probably, in the entire game. Again, it's a decent save. It's kind of similar to the ones we've talked about with him recently, where it's quite close to him, but he's in no kind of doubt about what he wants to do with it. He wants to just get that clear. I mean, in terms of that chance and really any other, was there any point you felt like a Queen's Park goal was kind of on the cards in that second half? Les?
I mean, I thought it could have been coming. I do think Queen's Park were a lot less dangerous when first Sheridan and thereafter Thomas came off. I think, you know, we talked about in the pre-match pod, you know, Sheridan had kind of been this sort of almost banter figure after his spell at Inverness, but he was really good, I thought, for Queen's Park yesterday. You know, he's a big unit, and he was causing us a lot of bother. I think it might have been Peyton. Somebody had a very powerful header that went past the post, which I actually didn't see it come in because I glanced down at my phone to check the scores. I looked up and saw the ball zipping past the post. I was like, Jesus Christ, that could have been dangerous. You know, they had a couple of moments, but yeah, I think they came in a kind of flurry. They had a spell of corners as well. Kev had a good save. Sheridan, you're only going to get 60 minutes out of him, given, you know, his age and his injury history. You're not going to get more than an hour out of him. Thomas been taken off, I thought that was a strange one, again, just given his quality and experience. And, you know, and again, as we've seen in the past with Queen's Park, although they're a vastly improved side to what we saw with Eldman, they still have a lot of very young players. And then you are bringing a lot of very kind of young, inexperienced guys on when you're taking some of these older guys off. So, yeah, I think they had a couple of chances, but they certainly weren't battering us. I think, you know, there was at the end of the first half, we were pinned in for quite a while, and it looked like there was a conscious decision to sit a bit deeper and just kind of weather the storm. But, you know, they had a few chances, but they certainly weren't battering us, and they definitely became less dangerous as the second half wore on.
Yeah, I think
I think if you want a, not that I'm advocating that opposition managers should listen to us mumbling on a lot of nonsense, but if you want a blueprint for how to play against us, Killian Sheridan gave you it yesterday. Yeah. Be big, be tall, go against Scott Brown. Like, with the best will in the world, Killian Sheridan won every single header that he had to win yesterday. Brown got absolutely no change out of him whatsoever. But at the same time, they never created anything of significant note. But it was a really good save from Big Kev. Again, we've spoken about it, and you mentioned it's really close to him, and through a sea of bodies as well. So credit to you, that was really good.
Aye. I was surprised he took Dom Thomas off, not because he was playing well. I actually think that's the poorest I've seen him playing in a while. Mm. But just that he's the kind of guy who
only needs one chance, you know, can get something out of nothing, a decent shot on him from range. And I think you're right, Les. That Queen's Park squad is still in that place where they've managed to bring a couple of decent players in. They've improved their starting 11, but fundamentally they're still bringing on inexperienced guys, haven't played a lot of football, certainly not at this level. And I think that did contribute a fair bit to the kind of pattern of the last 15 minutes, where, and particularly watching it back in the highlights, the Rovers really are kind of knocking on the door in that later period. I mean, the Scott McGill chance, the first one, the it's even better goalkeeping than I thought it was at the time. Mm. On the first angle, from the highlights, it looks like Stanton should only have to stretch and put it in. It's only seeing it from the kind of the GoPro angle from behind. He's never, you know, close enough to it. He's never got any chance. But there's that one when McGill kind of puts it across the goal and Ferry kind of gets a hand out to it. Stanton then has the sort of audacious kind of lob type effort. The keeper saves as well. There's then Callum Smith has a fairly decent chance where he gets the ball out from under his feet, but maybe not enough power in the shot. Scott McGill has a similar one, which goes just wide of the post. Callum Smith then has the one that he snatches at, where the ball's been kind of bobbling around. I mean, listing out those chances like that, is it a case of maybe kind of starting to talk about, you know, you should be doing better? Or do you just come up against a goalkeeper on his day and you've kind of got to put your hands up to that? Blair, give me your thoughts just on any of those chances and anything you want to pick out from that.
Yeah, I was going to say yesterday was just like, it was the universe for me. You know, what Mehmet giveth, Ferry taketh away. He was brilliant. And you have to, sometimes you just have to hold your hands up and say, like, we created good opportunities. We tested the goalie and he was, you know, up to it. The one from McGill, I mean, we were basically along the 6-yard line. I was celebrating because I thought the way the ball was spinning, I thought it was going to nestle in the bottom corner. And as the ball went past the post, I was absolutely gutted. It's just one of those, I think. Like, you know, you could look at that and go, it's a shame that fell to McGill. Which is harsh, but, you know, if it had fallen to Vaughan, what would have happened? If it had fallen to Easton, what would have happened? That kind of thing. But I don't think McGill does anything wrong. I think it's a really good effort. He gets it on target. He gets the ball down. The Stanton effort is ridiculous. The save is ridiculous. I think it's just one of those. Fair play to Ferry. He's clearly a very good goalkeeper. And we just couldn't beat him.
When you look at the three kind of big saves, I see there's one where he gets out really quick to Vaughan and it all goes through his legs. He gets it away from the goal. There's mm-hmm. then the close range one where it's basically a reaction save from McGill, and then a really kind of acrobatic save from Stanton. It's like three different kind of pieces of goalkeeping, three different skills from a goalkeeper. Leslie, do you think there's many other goalkeepers in the division that kind of are able to do all of that?
Kevin Dubrovsky. Other than that, probably not. I think he had Ferry had an absolutely magnificent game yesterday. And again, it's like when you're playing the computer game and you look at the player and there's the wee red up arrow, you know, that means they're just on absolutely magnificent form and you know that you're not ever going to beat them. I mean, the only thing I could say if I was picking it here is a wee bit from our side is, and it goes back to what I said at the top of the show, that with the starting members that we had missing and with the fact that we'd had to move players around, the tiger cage maybe wasn't as strong yesterday as it might otherwise have been. So, you know, in another week, you might have been able to bring Aidan Connolly off the bench, and then you're talking about Aidan Connolly getting those chances with fresh legs rather than Scott McGill. You know, you might then have Louis Vaughan playing a wee bit further forward for the whole game and maybe being in a slightly better position for some of the earlier chances. That's picking at hairs, though, and that's not in any way a criticism of those players. And it was a few weeks ago, and Jim Clark had said this in the commentary at Wraith TV, the other team are allowed to play well. You know, if we don't win, it's not always our fault. And you do just have to say it was a magnificent goalkeeping performance. I've said it before, the standard of goalkeeping in the Championship is very good, and Callum Ferry is up there with the best of them.
That's it. I mean, we'll talk about our kind of Rovers man of the match in a second, but I don't think there's any denying if you were picking a neutral, you know, a man of the match across both sides, it's Callum Ferry for me by a fair distance. I don't think anybody else stood out more than he did. Scott, anything you want to add on any of that kind of final period, any of those chances up towards the end of the game?
Yeah, I mean, just kind of what Blair was touching on with the Stanton effort, it was just ridiculous. I mean, at that point, my stream was kind of playing up. It was kind of jumping and stuff like that. So I only saw it clearer on the highlights. And just, I almost didn't understand how Ferry reacted so quickly to it. Because it was so, it's different if it was like a looping overhead kick for the edge of the box or something that he's just like backtracked and got to. But this one, he's actually had to just fling himself at it and just hope that he can get fingertips on to tip it round the post. And somehow he's managed to get back and do it. So fair play to him. But Stanton must, as soon as he's hit it, he's probably kind of glanced back and just thought, oh, that's going in. And then just as it's not, he must have been just devastated. I know it was. I mean, I think one thing is, I don't know, I can't remember if Murray maybe mentioned it in his interview, but it's more of a thing, especially for strikers, it's more frustrating if we're not creating these chances than if you're getting the chances but not taking them. Whereas we created plenty yesterday, yeah, it didn't go in, but at the same time, yeah. I think if you told us that it was going to be 7 points in a week, however that happened, the 7 points, I think folk would have actually, again, it's that perspective of, see if we'd got a draw midweek and won that yesterday, the sort of the feel around the result would have been a hell of a lot different, because then it's, oh, we've won when Dundee United didn't win. But at the same time, it doesn't matter if you got the point midweek or got it yesterday, it's the same points at the end of the day. So I think, yeah, 7 points out of nine in a week in the Championship's a pretty good return, considering the amount of games we've kind of played in the last couple of weeks as well. So, no, I was kind of happy with everything. And, it's different if we're not making the chances.
That's it. And it's creating chances at one end and keeping them out at the other end. You know, 3 clean sheets on the bounce. I don't know that I necessarily thought this Rovers team had that in them, if I'm honest.
Especially after our growth.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
And especially with another midfielder at right back.
Yeah. that's a good point. Maybe if you'd said to me 6 weeks ago, oh, the Rovers are going to go 3 clean sheets in the bounce, I'd be saying, ah, I see what happens when you get Watson and Murray playing together and finally you get a settled back four. But that's not been the case, but they've really done very, very well to adapt to that. In terms of man of the match, so for me it would be Ross Matthews. I think just you've got the circumstance of having to step into a situation that he's, you know, typically unfamiliar with, although has played there before. And as we said earlier, I just thought the way that he kind of stepped up to the plate and didn't just do the basics. You know, you see that sometimes, you especially asking a player to go into defence. You know, they'll do their defending, but they won't, they're almost afraid to do any more than that for risk of leaving the door open. I thought he did much more than just his defending. He was stepping out and in a way that sometimes our actual fullbacks haven't always done this season. So I thought did very well with that. Scott, anyone else you want to kind of put forward for man of the match?
To be honest, I had Ross Matthews and my thoughts for it, to be honest. It was, other than, as you say, if you were just a neutral, it probably would have been Callum Ferry because of the, especially the second half, the saves he was making to keep, he basically got Queen's Park that point yesterday after the second half performance. So I think it would probably have to be Ross Matthews. I mean, if you were to pick out anybody else, you could possibly say one of the other defenders, if anything, just the fact there was another clean sheet, but I don't think you could have given it to anybody in the attacking sort of sense. There wasn't really any standouts up front at all.
That's fair.
Leslie, anyone for you? Anyone you want to shine a light on?
I'd just be another vote for Ross Matthews. I mean, also just picking up what Scott said. I thought Ewan Murray did well as well. Although there was a couple of points in the first half as well. Louis Vaughan made an uncharacteristically sloppy back pass. Ended up, you know, could have been very, very dangerous for us. Ewan Murray just mopped it up. He also, again, took one, to use the John Hughes parlance, in the dish, and required a bit of treatment for it. But, you know, it took the stop the ball, took the sting out of the Queen's Park attack. So I thought Ewan Murray, again, in the absence of Keith Watson, he's really stepped up to the plate as a leader. Nick, no game next weekend would be a really nice time to give us a new bit of news, like, for example, a Ross Matthews contract extension. So if anybody from the club is or the management is listening, get on to it.
Blair, full house, you going Matthews as well?
Yeah, 100%. I would also just honourable mentions that the rest of the back four, actually. I thought Brown and Dick, very good. And Kyle Turner, for me, again. I agree with Scott, though, everybody beyond that. It was pass marks, but nothing stand out. But no, really, really impressed with Ross Matthews at right back. Really impressed.
That's it. I think it's over the piece you're talking about, kind of 6s and 7s out of 10, which is what you'd expect from a 0-0. But whilst we did not play brilliantly, but by any stretch of the imagination, I also didn't think anybody played badly at all, which is not always the case with these 0-0s. You know, we played Morton, there were deficiencies in there. I think that one, like, you've got to give the opposition credit sometimes. Not an easy place to go, fundamentally. A good point, and I think if either side was going to win that, I thought we looked more likely the longer the game went on, but kind of ran out of time.
You kind of forget as well, they've scored 10 in their last four, albeit 6 of them were against Arbroath, and Arbroath were at fault for about 5 of them. But, you know, they were a team that came into that game in pretty good goal-scoring form. Like, the fact that we went there with two midfielders at the back and got a clean sheet in any game in the Championship is good, but I think that's worth bearing in mind as well.
In our last 100%. Two games as well, we've came up against the two top, arguably the two top strikers in the league, and none of them have scored. So, fair play to, again, Scott Brown filling in and Ewan Murray taking one in the dish yet again.
It's a much more kind of mature, maybe not the right word, but... You know, in the way that in the first half of the season there was, we've not said the word Murray ball for weeks.
No,
and that doesn't not necessarily to say that this is a better way of doing it than otherwise.
Far more composed, though, isn't it?
Exactly. You know, there is a chance that with the kind of chaos factor of the first half of the season, we might have won that 3-2. Easily could have lost it 3-2 as well. 0-0, but with a lot of good chances towards the end of the game to win that. Like, I'm quite happy with that.
Right. And, I was going to say, just really quickly, when Murray went there, I forgot about it until Les mentioned taking one in the coupon. When he was down injured, one of the boys next to me was like, oh, no, Murray's injured. That's it. Like, no, our staff was like, it's all right, it's just his head. It's just his head. Like, it's not his groin. It's not his shoulder. It's just his face. We'll be fine. It's just the face.
Well, it's like his skull was a quarter of an inch thicker than anybody else's. You and Murray syndrome. Oh, why me? so just a final point on this game. Then we talked about this at the beginning, so we don't need to kind of labour this point. But when the full-time whistle does go, and 0-0, creditable performance, as we've said, there was a smattering of boos, I think is probably the official parlance for that. Now, worth pointing out that, I mean, in terms of a vocal minority, it's kind of booing is literally that. It's much easier to make yourself heard. And it was only, you know, probably a handful of people in that stand compared to the hundreds that were quite happily kind of applauding the players' efforts. But, I mean, come on. Like, I'm kind of holding back a little bit we've talked before at other points this season about, like, the sense of entitlement and all this kind of stuff. And, like, I said that maybe 10 minutes ago. You, people who just saw the scoreline, you know, like Dundee United fans who, you know, fair play, didn't watch the game. You wouldn't expect them to. They see the scoreline, they're like, oh, 0-0, you know, they've bottled it, etc., etc. You know, it's not like we haven't been saying that all season about them, based mostly just on their scorelines. The folk in the ground who've just watched the 90 minutes as it unfolded,
And like, I heard a guy after the game and he's like, oh, shat the bed as usual. Like, have you just been, have you been reading a book for the last 90 minutes? Like, that's, like, that.
No, he definitely hasn't. There's many things that that individual might have been doing. Reading is not one of them.
But like, after the Arbroath game, that's a legitimate opinion.
Yep.
You know, that's absolutely, you could point that finger and be justified. But not, that's not just not how that game unfolded. It's just not, like, it's not a representation of...
Had we played rubbish yesterday, and then folk went, oh, it was 0-0 and we never looked like doing anything. That's different. But when you've created chances and came up against a good goalie, and I just wasn't your day in front of goal, there's not much else you could have done, really. It's, as you say, it is a sense of entitlement, and some folk really just need to have a look at themselves sometimes, because it's the Rovers are never going to be... It's almost like they're treating us like we're Celtic or Rangers going to win every game, and you're just like, hold on a second, we're up against a team, arguably, that think that they should have been winning this league by 20 points going by their fans, and the fact that they've got a striker that's on about $4,000-$5,000 a week, which is about four players for us. Like, I mean, folk really need to give themselves a shake at times. It is quite pathetic how it's so not, it's like, so Ian Murray goes on about it as well with the squad. It's like, some folk just get so high and just stay up there until we get beaten. Yeah. And it's like, oh, it's the end of the world. And you're just like, well, there's got to be some sort of perspective at some point here. It's, nah.
I feel like some of them are almost, and this is going to sound terrible, I think, like some of them are almost waiting for it to happen. Like, they almost can't wait.
They want it to happen.
for the reason to boot. I mean, and the thing is, the one thing I want to do here is make sure that we don't fall into that lazy narrative. The same way we do when, you know, when like somebody throws a pyro and it hits a fan and you go, oh, they're no really Rovers fans. They're probably Rangers fans that are there for the day. Some of the folk that we're booing have been going to the Rovers for a long, long time, home and away, and have been going through a lot worse times than this and still cannot get perspective. Like, there are a few of them that need to take a genuinely long, hard look at themselves. There was shouts in the first half of, change it, Murray, this is pish. I mean, come on. We are joint top of the league at that point, because we've got a point in the bag at that point. You know what I mean? We're joint top of the league with, what, 7 games left to go? And that's the shout that we get. We've got 2 midfielders in defence, and change it, Murray, this is pish. Like, just didn't come back. Like, I'm not being funny. I'll take 1,500 at a home game. I'm all right with it. I'll pay. Do you know what? Make it £30 to get in. I'm all right with it. Have an aptitude test to be allowed to go. I'm all right with it. It just frustrates the life out of me. Like, these guys, oh.
I mean, it's just the thing. I mean, it's not, I was saying this to Nalco, my wife, when we left the ground, that at any level of football, you're, unless you're talking about like Celtic, Rangers, Man City, when you've got that kind of gap between you and the rest, you're not going to go out and dominate and boss and batter teams for 90 minutes every week. You know, even like you look at the top leagues around Europe, you don't get teams like, you know, your Aston Villas and your Tottenhams and these kind of teams. They don't go out and dominate for a full 90 minutes. It just doesn't happen. You know, like Scott says, they're boys that are playing at the level they are. They're doing exceptionally well. We've had a fantastic season. If you didn't have a Dundee United in the league with the record they've had, most seasons this points haul would be enough to have you well clear. We're doing a terrific job. We're doing a terrific job with the resources that we have and with the investment that we've had. But we're not going to go out there and boss and dominate teams every week, because it simply doesn't happen at any level of football at all.
We're also
exactly the same thing can be said for Dundee United.
Aye, absolutely.
So I was just going to say the Sack Goodwin thing, right? And I'm all for it because I think he's an absolute goon. But and it annoys me because they're not giving us any credit whatsoever. It's like, in any other season, United have already won the league with the points tally and the games and the goals that they have. The only reason is that we won't go away. We will not leave them alone. Do you know what I mean? And it's that thing of, like, sorry.
Like, we're really only annoyed. 5 points off Dundee's championship winning total last season.
That was exactly what I was going to say.
barring an absolute disaster, we'll finish with more points than the champions did last year. Yeah. So it is that. It's that. It actually works both ways, both for ourselves and Dundee United, that if not for the other, we have ostensibly played well enough to win the championship most years. And whoever finishes second has to almost try and kind of take that belief into the playoffs. And it's very difficult to do. And it will be very difficult for whoever plays second going into the playoffs to try and take the positive mentality from that rather than the negative mentality of having been so close and missed out. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how Dundee United do cope with that. It's just, I don't know. I find it's you said it, Blair, about like the people who are waiting for it to happen. And it's like, you've got to let yourself believe. What's the point otherwise? I don't understand the mental. There must be easier ways to spend your Saturday afternoons. Like,
I mean, Ian Lattle said it months ago, didn't he? Like, if you can't enjoy this, like, you're in the wrong place. Because this is pretty much, and certainly, I mean, I've been going 30 years. Barring that one spell in the mid-90s, this is as good as it's ever been.
Yeah.
Like,
this is the good old days.
Yeah.
We've just not fast forward to them enough yet. Like,
totally.
And I mean, look, well, there are other places to go. Like, you know, it could get better than this. But I mean, history will tell you that it probably won't. And then not to let, you know, myself be kind of captured by the negativity. But fundamentally, like, this is. Aye, exactly. Like, if you've been going for 25 or 30 years, you know, which I have, this is the best it's been. So to be there and be like, I wasn't going to mention this because I actually think it's so ridiculous it doesn't bear mention. But somebody last night at full time, yesterday afternoon, shouted, embarrassing. It's like, compared to what? What is your scale? What else is on that scale? And where is the needle on that? Like, but a 0-0 draw away from home where you've played well, like, and you're top of the league, joint top of the league.
Maybe they were shouting at the fans that were booing.
I hope so. I don't think so, but I hope so. No, that would be, so I mean, that would be a much more palatable reaction, a much more understandable reaction. But, like, I don't know. I don't know what your threshold for embarrassment is, if that ranks in, like, embarrassing. It's just, mental, really, is the only word for it. Absolute, just madness. I can't kind of fathom that sort of mentality. Being that quick to leap to, like, oh, the world's over. Everything's a nightmare. It's all a disaster all the time. Like,
it's like these people have never been to, like, lower league Scottish football.
But as Blair says,
is literally. It's there is a little bit, you will find some quality in it, but it's banter, literally, the whole season. It's everyone's a laugh, and it's serious for 90 minutes, but at the same time, after the game, you just go, that was a good laugh if, like, something happened that was quite ridiculous in the game, or a manager just went tonto at somebody, or whatever. It is literally just, that's why you see it all over Twitter, just every week, there's something ridiculous has happened in the lower leagues.
Aye. And you could almost understand it more if it was people who had just, like, oh, that team's winning, I'm going to go down and watch it. But as you say, Blair, it's you see people and you're like, you're here more often than I am. Like, I am absolutely. Every game I'm at, you are here. And the few games I miss, I presume you are also here. You'd think just from that, like, exposure alone would, like, kind of soften out the highs and lows of the thing. But listen, people wear their hearts on their sleeves, and there's no,
in their defence as well, probably from years and years of watching the Rovers, we have been conditioned to hate ourselves. Like, I mean, that's the only reason you go on a Saturday, innit, is like some kind of weird self-punishment kind of penance type thing. I don't know. It's the only thing I can think of.
Either that or that. It's being so conditioned to just the incessant negativity of getting bodied every week, and you start winning, it just doesn't feel right, and you're desperate to get back to what you know, maybe. But listen, there's no point where I'm ever going to say that people aren't entitled to their opinions and all that kind of stuff, but equally,
have them quiet.
I think I'm entitled to think it's ludicrous, put it that way. But that probably, I think, kind of rounds us off for yesterday, unless there's any other kind of stray thoughts, any final additions on that? Perfect. So that then brings us into next week, or the week to come. And nice little change of pace, very worthwhile change of pace. Wednesday night, we have Lewis Vaughan's testimonial game, which should be a good laugh, as everything else invariably seems to be. And Hibs, I caught Nick Montgomery on the radio yesterday. They were asked about it, and he says, bring a young side through, but he is actually also just hoping to play. Like, and it just sounded like that was in his voice. He was like, I hope I'll play. I'd like to get a game as much as anything. I think David Gray is going to play as well. And it sounded
Murray
like
said the same thing, didn't
was I? Very I, much the same. I, yeah. It was like, oh, me and Mickey are keen, but we need to find out if Lewis wants us to play or not first. Just like having it go.
Two managers half each other in a 50-50.
Well, I like the idea of the gaffer having to go and chat the player's door to see if he can play on Wednesday night. But it'll be good. I mean, I think was Dave McGurn's testimonial, was that the most recent testimonial?
Yeah. No, Davidson.
Davidson.
That was after that.
Yeah.
I missed it. I was really gutted. I missed Dave McGurn's. I was away. But it was at that one where John Greer entered the field of play to conduct an interview mid-game.
With Alan Walker, where he offered him some pies.
I tell you, I'll say this for John Greer. You say whatever you like about him, he's brave.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, it'll be a good laugh, if nothing else. And should be interesting as well. I mean, it seems like Ian Murray's keen to get some minutes into some players who haven't had, so many recently. The players that are out on loan will be coming back as well. So you'll get to see the likes of Aaron Arnott and Adam Masson and these guys as well. Anything?
I'm going to say this now because I have to get it out loud because it's gnawing at my brain. So we're 7 games from the end of a season in a title race, and we have a free week, so we're having a testimonial for our longest serving player who absolutely deserves it. A very injury prone player, 7 games from the end of the season. Am I the only one that's really scared? Really scared that. Like Nick Montgomery is going to end up 2-footing Lewis Vaughan at some point in this game. Like it's going to descend. And I mean, I'm fully expecting Sam Stanton to turn up ready to play, like in full kit. And be told, no, Sam, no, you're not allowed to play. But I mean, Vaughan's going to have to play. Yeah, but Vaughan's going to have to play, surely. And like, if they don't put Scott Brown out there just to run around protecting him at all points, I'm going to be raging. Because could you imagine? That'd be the most Rovers thing ever for Lewis Vaughan to pull up.
Who did we play for Davos again? Was it Hibs as well?
It was Hibs. Yeah, it was a pre-season friendly though.
Did Davos not only play like 25 minutes and then came off?
Aye, that's right, because Brecon said they didn't want to play.
I'd do the same with Vaughan.
Aye. Yeah. Yeah, he didn't play for us anymore. That was the problem. But it was a pre-season friendly. Yeah.
Except Brecon, aye.
It was a pre-season friendly, though, so it was played as a pre-season friendly, as all pre-season friendlies are, at a slightly lesser pace and all the rest of that. Like, this is going to be good fun, absolutely good fun, but I am so scared. So scared.
I'm not expecting blood and thunder in this one. I think I think there could be a couple of boys out there with their baffies on for large parts of this game.
God, I hope so.
I reckon you'll probably see, even though it's a young Hibs team, you'll probably see guys like... Paul Hanlon and Lewis Stevenson playing if they're fit.
Yeah.
Because Lewis has been on the bench most of the season for Ibs, and Lewis is a boy for Kirkcaldy, well known in the Rovers fan base as well. That he was a Rovers fan growing up, so even him coming back, I know that he'll have probably spoke to Vaughan in the build up to this as well and saying, look, that Ibs are probably happy to come and do this because obviously Lewis is a Ibs fan growing up, so. No, fair play that they got the game and whatever, but I'm not as scared as Blair is, but that is at the back of the mind of only play him for half an hour, then give him a reception, and then just get on with Guy and Cor and McGill. And it sounds like we're getting all the lone players pretty much a lot of game time as well, from what Ian Murray said. So I think Callum Hanna, Arnott and Masson will probably be playing as well.
I reckon that... Hibs should let us use Lewis Stevenson for half this game because it will tick off a whole number of boxes for everybody. It benefits everybody. So, you know, this thing about Lewis Stevenson being a Rovers fan growing up, he can play a Rovers game. However, with it being a friendly, it won't then go on his Wikipedia, so he still just gets the one club man entry. Everybody who kind of has been talking about Lewis Stevenson coming for the last decade gets to be like, oh, we're right. But then, you know, ultimately we don't get him. Then Liam Dick comes back in for the rest of the season and Graham's happy. So this benefits everybody.
I think the only thing would be, with us not having a game this week anyway, there would probably be some sort of bounce game that would take place. We'd just never hear about it. Maybe, so yeah. I don't think it's that much kind of added risk. But obviously, as you say, the fact that we do know about it does just Cheers. Kind of dial up the Rovers meter.
This is Lewis Vaughan, who basically relegated us once for Dumbarton and is now seven games from a championship winning side playing his testimonial. Like, it's the most Rovers thing ever.
Yeah, hopefully just by saying it out loud now, we're kind of getting that out of the way.
I feel better.
Well, listen, we've never made a single successful prediction up till this point. So for us to do it now would be a real turn up for the books. So,
you're right, I feel much better.
What do you think the team lineup's going to be?
Aye, well, I'll tell you what, we'll give away two t-shirts for this one. Because hopefully there'll be a few kind of guests and reappearances and all this kind of stuff that you normally get for a testimonial. And hopefully a nice kind of decent crowd for that as well. I don't know if they've announced the kind of Wraith TV for it yet. I would hope again that would be covered just as an extra kind of revenue stream. But
tickets are on sale though, guys. I mean, genuinely, like, if you're available on Wednesday night, if there's anybody at this club who deserves the support, it's Lewis Vaughan. So get yourself down to Starks Park.
It's been good to see as well on Twitter and Facebook that Hibs have kind of been pushing it this week as well. Like, Hibs have obviously realised that Vaughan is a Hibs fan and they've went, well, look, let's try and support the guy. And everybody in Scottish football now knows about Vaughan, even after, I think it was like his third one, his ACL, that everybody started to realise, right, this guy's getting nail up whatsoever. Like, it just absolutely nail up. And I've said it a few times, my dad said it a few times, when you look at that Scotland team these days, I'm sorry, but Lewis Vaughan with Nate ACLs is playing for Scotland at some point when you've got Kevin Nisbet, Lauren Shankland, Lyndon Dykes, who have all played Scottish Championship and League One within the same time that Vaughan was there. And I think that Vaughan might not be the goal scorer that Shankland is, but he's certainly a much better player than he is. So I think I'm not being too ridiculous by saying that I think he would have been in with us out, because he still wouldn't be playing for us if he was without them as well.
Aye, definitely. That's it. I mean, so the tickets for this, it's £15 for adults, £5 concessions. Hospitality's completely sold out, but there's plenty of tickets in the stands. And as you say, Blair, hopefully get as many people down as possible. If anybody's on the fence for this, I think there is absolutely only one way to come down on it. You know, you will not find a more worthwhile recipient of a testimonial for the Rovers than Lewis Vaughan.
Be good if they start announcing some players as well this week that are, because I imagine there's going to be, he's been at the club a long time, like, there's going to be a few former teammates are going to be rocking up to celebrate with him, kind of thing. So I'm quite looking forward to the social media dinging off this week, hopefully with so and so announced to be arriving on Wednesday to play in the game, kind of thing, which will hopefully drive up the tickets as well.
Aye, definitely. And we will have an episode kind of back end of this week. I don't know exactly when it will be to, hopefully a more lighthearted review of that game. It could be incredibly somber, depending on who else is involved and what else happens. But on the assumption that everything is absolutely fine, nobody does anything stupid, we'll have a nice kind of look back on that. And I think it sounds like plans are afoot for that just to become, as it should be, just a kind of Lewis Vaughan sort of tribute episode. And there'll be kind of favourite moments and all that kind of stuff that we'll go over, particularly with no game at the weekend. We've got plenty of time to devote some
yeah, very worthy time to that. But I think that will kind of bring us to a close for today. So thank you, gents, for joining me. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. As you say, hopefully see as many people as possible. If there's any kind of undecided, anything at all, get yourself down to Starks Park on Wednesday night. Bring friends, whatever else, because there is absolutely nobody more deserving than Lewis Vaughan. As you say, we will be back at some point, kind of towards the end of the week. And then after that, we'll get a proper preview for a huge game at Tannadice. And just cross our fingers in the meantime that Duncan Ferguson can actually do someday a bit of good for once when his side take on Dundee United before then. So, as I say, thank you again, and we will see you soon.